This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing. Your numbers locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. And you can send us an email anytime, any place, anywhere you want to. It's talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin our discussion with Jason Batto. He's the student body president of LSU, a junior economics major from Alexandria, and we've got a lot to talk with Jason about, including that $85 million recreation center not far from where he lives at his fraternity house. But let's begin there. You're with Sigma Phi Epsilon.
Yes, sir.
And you live in the house?
I do.
And it's been a good experience for you?
Fantastic. It really has.
Why? Why?
You know, you live with 28 of your brothers and your best friends, and while you have fun together, they also hold you accountable. We have ability to study with all our guys in our house, and at the same time have a great time whenever we're ready to have some fun. So,
well, what do you make of the problems some of the other fraternities are having?
Yes, sir. It seems to be, you know, we have this culture that's grown in the last few years of hazing and extreme hazing, and it's something we have to realize that that's not really what builds brotherhood, and that's not truly what has someone buy into a chapter. So what we need to do is continue to work with our chapters to develop their development programs and gear them around student success rather than tearing people down.
Were you hazed?
No, sir. Sigma Phi Epsilon is a non-hazing fraternity. Actually, it eliminated the pledgeship model a few years ago in favor of its Balanced Man program.
Were you stunned when you heard about what was going on at Phi Delta Theta?
It was shocking. I mean, anything of that scale and magnitude is horrible and terrible. So. Mm-hmm.
How is the admission process? What do you have to do during rush to make an impression and get an invitation to join?
Yes, sir. So rush is a very formal process at LSU, which is unlike many other schools, which is a good thing in my opinion. It's very structured. Mm-hmm. You have time at each house to visit with each house. Parties are banned after formal rush events. So it's really a very structured environment, no alcohol. Speaking with members and just being yourself and finding the group that you fit in with.
And where exactly is your house located?
Our house is on the corner of Sorority Row, actually next to Lod Cook, in between Lod Cook and Kahnemeka.
Not a bad place.
No, it's a great place. Great location.
Not far from the rec center either.
That's right.
So that helps a lot. But you're on this task force that,
yes, sir,
President Alexander has impaneled.
Yes, sir.
How's that going?
It's going well. You know, we're still in kind of the exploratory phase. The Greek Life Office and Student Advocacy and Accountability are reaching out to us and educating us on their disciplinary processes, how Greek Life handles issues, mm-hmm, so that we can go forward and make policy decisions in the future.
Now, to the problems that included the death of Maxwell Groover at one fraternity and others that have been disciplined, another one thrown off campus lately, that was Lambda Chi. Do you think that sometimes makes it tough to be a member of a Greek organization anywhere on campus?
Yes, sir. We're definitely under a spotlight, and we're held to a different standard than most other campus organizations because of the risk or the perceived risk that's associated with it.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to join the conversation. Jason Batto is our guest, and he's an economics major from Alexandria, only a junior, and you've already gotten to the highest spot on campus, which is quite impressive. So congratulations. You're on the fast track. I would suspect that maybe a future in politics might be in the offing.
Maybe so.
Well, the mood on campus after the death of Maxwell Groover, what was it like?
Shocked. And I think it was a big wake-up call to most of the Greek community. Operations for most Greek houses ceased immediately, and a lot of our leaders and presidents of our chapters really came to terms with some of the issues that they're facing and working on ways to stop them in their individual chapters.
Okay. Now, as far as the conversation of late about the new $85 million rec center which opened, Stephanie Regal, who hopefully we'll hear from her in just a few moments.
Yes,
she is, of course, the editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. She wrote a story about it, and a good conversation has ensued about the wisdom of it. It's a beautiful facility.
Absolutely.
No incredible. Questioning that. And I'm sure you take advantage of it.
I do.
Yeah?
You
like it?
As much as possible.
Yeah.
The little free time I have.
State of the art. But the cost and the process, those are the two things. One thing, though, that I think we can put to rest is that it wasn't done in lieu of another project at LSU. Like, you didn't choose to do this over the library.
Right. No money was displaced from anywhere else on campus.
But it came up to a vote in 2010, long before you were there.
Yes, sir.
So people are paying this fee, which it has to go on for quite some time to get to $85 million, who had no vote on it, and mm-hmm. there's a question about that.
Right.
And why was it on the agenda in lieu of other things right. that might have been more pressing? Who made that choice? Do
right.
you know?
Yes, sir. So that was student government. The things that go on the referendum for vote of the student body are pushed through the student senate, and if they're approved, it goes to referendum. It was a student government initiative because our wellness center had fallen behind so many of our other universities.
Mm-hmm. Do you recall how many people voted in the election?
No, sir. Once again, way before my time.
But once again, you got around 30,000 students at LSU.
Correct.
A good turnout for an election like when you won. How many
Correct.
Voted?
I want to say around 6,000. So
6,000. Yeah. So we're talking about 20% of the
yes,
student
sir.
Body votes in an election, and then if you get a little over 10% of that 20, get half of that 20%, which is about 10% of the student body, you can get something done. In this case, $85 million. And to put it in perspective, the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans was constructed a few years before that for $114 million.
Right.
And I guess the question is, how in the world did that kind of a number come up? That would seem to be substantial. You could build a lot of buildings for $85 million.
Yes, sir. Well, that was a student-supported fee. The UREC has always operated off a student-supported fee, and the vote was just to increase that fee for the expansion. Now, the expansion more than doubled the facility from 120,000 square feet to over 240,000, as well as built an entire new intramural field complex off of River Road. They're also building a new, smaller UREC at the Nicholson Gateway Extension as well for students living on that side of campus.
All right. Well, Stephanie, in her column, she calls it a lazy river of priorities, noting that a recent issue of the Chronicle of Higher Education took LSU to task for the new lazy river, a luxury lounge pool that's the marquee attraction of the University Recreation Center, which was recently overhauled at a cost of $85 million. The article titled "The Lure of the River" discusses the proliferation of lazy rivers and other lavish recreational amenities on public university campuses and explains how such high-end attractions are being funded by ever steeper student fees at a time when state and federal support for academic programs is dwindling. Now, do you know how much you pay per year, for example, for the construction of that center?
It's on the fee schedule, which I don't have on me. I don't have the number memorized.
Because Stephanie, in her piece, says it's $135, and we'll have her. She has called in, and we're pleased to hear that she has. But $135 a year would only come to about $12 million for 3 years, which is it's going to be on for that. So we've just got to find a way to get to the other $73 million it costs. I suspect this has been paid every semester for several years by the student body, and most of these students never had a vote on it. And those who had the opportunity didn't exercise it. Stephanie, what's your impression? Thank you for calling in this morning. Stephanie Regal, the editor of the Baton Rouge Business Report. Your impression about the conversation that your story has stimulated?
Well, and I wish I could answer your question better about the fees. I'm pretty sure I pulled that number from the Chronicle of Higher Education story. So, you may be right. It may be $135 a semester. Obviously, it's for many, many years. But, this isn't to, question the validity of the vote that students made in 2010. I am sure students would willingly support higher fees to pay for some sort of wonderful attraction like this lazy river. But again, it's the bigger issue, Jim. It's the misplaced priorities. It's not just LSU, although I think Louisiana, our priorities are particularly misplaced here, as we've seen time and again with multiple institutions across multiple industry sectors. But, this is a nationwide problem as well. And there's something perverse about increasing student fees to pay for amenities when government support for public education is dwindling and we can't pay for some of the basics. As one of the professors at LSU who responded to my column said in the online comments, why can't they even pay to give me my own PC so I don't have to use my personal PC at work? That's pitiful when a professor at LSU has to use his own personal computer just to do his job. And there are multiple examples like this. I understand that the rec center didn't directly take any fees from anything else. Again, this is just a bigger issue about misplaced priorities.
All right. Jim on Jones Creek. Jim, You're on the air with Jason Batto and Stephanie Regal. Hi, Jim.
Hi. You know, when we were in middle school and high school and, you know, people ran for student government, they were always going to end homework and they were going to put more vending machines in and we were going to have pizza day every day. And then they get to college and they do the same thing with an $85 million rec center. And, you know, checks and balances, there needs to be some checks and balances on a bunch of kids without a clue. And I don't know any other way to put it, but, you know, y'all haven't grown up yet. And
all right, we do have to take a break, but Jim, thank you for calling. We'll ask Jason about this. And by the way, somebody got the construction contract, and I don't think, Jason may correct me, I don't think students had a voice in who got the deal. We're back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757. LSU, I think, can be rightfully proud of this new beautiful recreation facility. It's just whether or not the cost was worth the investment, $85 million. And to put it in perspective, the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans cost $114 million. And in this case, I assume Jason Batto, who's with us, student body president, along with Stephanie Regal, the editor of the Business Report, there was no cost to secure the land, which is sometimes a big cost in these kinds of projects. That was already taken care of. But this happened long before you, and certainly you're not being blamed for it. In 2010, some of us, Stephanie, are getting some criticism for not bringing it up then. Quite, I didn't know much about it then.
No, I don't either, and I don't even know what I was doing in 2010. But I wish I had, because it does, you know, it should have been more closely scrutinized, in my opinion. But, you know, the bigger issue, like you're caller Jim just said, no offense to students, but where are the adults in the room? You know, I have kids who are in high school and college. I've done the college tours. I know the importance of trying to recruit students and all the bells and whistles and what 17-year-olds go, you know, Google eyes over when they see it. And it's not fair to ask undergraduate students if they want to tax themselves and their fellow students in perpetuity for years and years and years to pay for this kind of amenity when it's just not where we should be placing our resources. We, meaning taxpayers and citizens of Louisiana. This is a state institution. Most of these kids are from Louisiana. Most of their parents, many of whom are helping them pay for these, their tuition, are from Louisiana. Our legislature, which is paying, you know, through TOPS, it's the whole thing. It's just messed up.
All right. Now, Jason is a stone's throw from the new rec center. Sorry. And how often do you use it?
I typically go once a week, especially to the rock climbing facility. Me and my buddies are big into rock climbing. So.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We love it.
I hear there's a great pool in there.
Oh, yeah.
And as a graduate, I'm told I can join for $648 a year.
That's
which
right.
Which probably is a pretty good deal.
That's
I don't
right.
live far from there.
Yes, sir.
So, hey, you know, you might have a new customer there, but mostly, is it full?
Absolutely. Student use has doubled, more than doubled, since the expansion occurred.
But do you have trouble getting to weight machines and things like that, if that's
nope.
your deal? No.
No, sir.
No.
Yeah, the congestion has really been relieved with the expansion.
Well, what about parking?
Parking as well is not a major problem. We have a giant X lot next to it. There's typically a place to park.
And the buses, I'm sure, stop there.
They do.
Yeah. Well, it's a show place, but and King Alexander, the president of LSU, Stephanie, he can't be blamed either. He wasn't around here in 2010. This he had nothing to do with this, but he has been defending it, and I imagine you've gotten some reaction to your column.
Well, I did. Online now there are only about 5 comments, but when this initially ran in the Daily Report and there was an abbreviated version of it, we got several dozen comments in response to that. Honestly, almost all of them were in support of the position that I made. And again, it wasn't, you know, a solid legal argument against this thing. There were no allegations of corruption, but it's just about misplaced priorities, which I've written about before with respect to athletics and leisure spending, you know, at LSU. And I even point out, like, the new LSU Foundation headquarters building, which is one of the beautiful new buildings going up on mm-hmm. campus by the beautiful new multi-use mixed-use LSU Gateway project. I get that we need these things, but we need to focus on some of the real priorities first.
Well, you note in your column that the university's new 536-foot-long lazy river is impressive, spelling out LSU as it winds through. Tropical foliage, music streams from outdoor speakers, and it's got 40,000 square feet of cardio and weight room space, the size of a neighborhood Walmart, 38-foot high ceiling wall, not to mention tennis courts, lap pools, and all sorts of groups, studios for group exercise. So it's quite a showplace that is available for students, and I wonder if those who made investments in this prior to graduating, who didn't live to see it, live as far as students to see its completion, are they given some free membership?
They are. They're provided vouchers after graduation. And you know, Jim and Stephanie, on your point, the fact of adults making decisions, if we look back the last 10 years, the adults have made pretty poor decisions. Go look at our legislature, what they've done to our university. So I'm very thankful that the students took the opportunity to expand something that they had the power to expand. If you make a 32 on your ACT, you can go to the University of Alabama for completely free. How is LSU going to compete? When we don't have the resources, we don't have the state support. And so the students took it upon themselves to expand something they had the ability to expand and attract other students to come. Now, as far as the taxing in the future goes, we can use that for any student fee. At that point, we can say we shouldn't have a student union because I didn't vote on the fee increase in 1960. So that's, to me, that's not an argument as far as the fee goes. People who voted on it and weren't able to use it are able to use it for free. Students are paying the fee, able to use it, and when you comparatively, $135 is a pretty cheap gym membership. So,
but do you think, if it's just $135, maybe $135 every semester, so it may be a little more than that, but do you think students would actually choose to go to LSU based on the rec center?
I think it helps, absolutely. I mean, any kind of nice facility is an attractive place for students. I know when I saw the plans for it, I was blown away.
What about the library?
It always goes back to the library, doesn't it? In the library, but that's not run by student fees, and that's on our legislators. I mean, when they lay the money out in our capital outlay for the refurbishment of our library, I'd love to see it. Once again, that goes back to our adults making such great decisions.
There you go. But you spend, you say, one day a week at the rec center.
Yes, sir.
Do you go to the library that often?
I do not study in the library. No. I'm not a big library studier. Too many people around. I like to study in my room.
You're like Yogi Berra, who said that nobody goes there anymore. The place is too crowded.
That's right.
Well, Stephanie Riegel, you went to LSU. I spent a lot of time at the Middleton Library when I was a student there, and apparently it's going to go by the wayside soon. Is there anything in the offing that would result in an impressive library being constructed at LSU?
Well, from what I hear, yes, there are plans in the works for a new library. And I've even heard talk that there's a possibility of assessing student fees, a fee to help partially pay for this. We ran a story on the Daily Report the other day, and I'm not sure of the details because I didn't actually write it. But in talking to people through the LSU community, I have heard this. I think the administration has not announced any plans yet, but they have made the library a priority. I mean, King Alexander has heard that loud and clear. And I believe it is a priority. I mean, and again, this doesn't fall on President Alexander, but this is something that predates him. But and to, you know, to the point that Jason just made about students making a wise decision when the legislature hasn't, I certainly agree with that. I mean, that point is very well taken. The legislature has screwed higher education time and again over the years. So, I get that. But as far as the library is concerned, I think the university is trying to move forward with that. But there are just so many dollars to go around, and there aren't many of them in Louisiana. We're the third poorest state in the nation, and we don't make higher education a priority. And so that's why there's just something incongruous when we come up with somehow $85 million for a lazy river.
All right. I'm told we've got some people waiting to talk to Jason and Stephanie, and we have some emails as well. So what we're going to do, Allie says John Feinstein, the celebrated sports writer, has agreed to move to tomorrow. So we'll have our discussion with the people from the Center for Planning Excellence coming up in our final segment. But we'll have one more segment with Stephanie Riegel of the Business Report and Jason Batto, the student body president at LSU. And if you'd like to join the conversation, there is one line open, 877-217-5757. What's the general mood on campus right now? You've got budget issues that have been prevailing for some time, Jason, and also this fraternity scandal. Is it a tough time on campus right now?
It's definitely a tough time. It's definitely a time that no student knows really how to maneuver. Everyone's taking it day by day and seeing, you know, how do we move forward as a university from the tragedy that occurred on our campus.
And LSU just lost to Alabama. That's never good.
No, sir.
Seven times in a row. Now, you see, the vote on this rec center was in 2010, and LSU's now lost to Alabama seven times in a row. Is there any connection, I wonder?
Yeah, correlation doesn't always imply causation.
There you go.
Leave it up to that.
There you go. You're a bright man. 877-217-5757, 297-5633, and talk at talklouisiana.org. We'll return with more discussion about what's going on at the Old War School after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Another segment with Jason Batto, the student body president of LSU, bright young man from Alexandria, a junior and already head of the student body and a member of Sigma Phi Epsilon, not far from the $85 million new UREC, the University Recreation Center. Stephanie Regal, who put a spotlight on this in her last column in the Business Report, A Lazy River of Priorities, is also with us. And if you'd like to join the conversation, there is time to do so at 877-217-5757. Chuck in Lafayette. Hi, Chuck. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I'm an older person, but I'd like to disagree with an earlier caller that about the maturity of the college students. I think most of them are quite mature and focused, and they make hard decisions with regard to where they go to school. But with regard to the library, I'd like to say, you know, we have to face the reality. Libraries aren't needed the way they used to be needed. We still need them, but the type of library, the physical space, isn't necessary. My final point, students need to be healthy and physically active, and that rec center has, if it has doubled the usage, then that's a plus. Thank you.
All right. Stephanie, your thoughts about some of the observations from Chuck in Lafayette. Did you hear Chuck, Stephanie?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm driving out of town. No, I did, and I don't disagree with anything he said. I mean, and in fact, King Alexander said in a speech to Rotary a couple of weeks ago that one of the great benefits of this rec center is that it keeps students on campus where they're, you know, supposedly safer. He said he'd love to lock them all in and have them there all the time. I mean, I get that argument. In terms of the maturity of students, certainly. I know many wonderful young people. My kids are that age. I'm very impressed with the maturity level and appreciate the serious decision these young people have to make. But I almost don't think it's fair to put them in a position of asking them if they want these lavish amenities on campus and are willing to tax themselves and their future students for years to come when we can't provide some of the basics for them.
All right.
And I agree with the caller about a library.
Allie.
Yes, libraries have different usages today, and there are different ways to, you know, we don't need a four-story library with books like we used to, but we need some sort of learning center with the resources and the online, and there's still plenty of graduate students who do research using old volumes and have to go through old microfilms and such, and there is a need for that at a tier one university, which LSU is.
Jason?
Absolutely. You know, I think students would love to not be in the place to have to make the decisions for their priorities on campus. But the reality is we do, because the legislature is not capable of making those decisions currently. You know, it's doubled its use. It's done great thing. I mean, it's directly tied towards mental health, student success. Students that are working out and active have higher GPAs than others on campus. I think it's a win-win. And now that we have a great facility on campus, something we can be proud of, we tear it down. We complain about it. So I don't understand where our priorities are as Louisiana, where as soon as we get something nice, regardless of where the money came from, by decision by our students, we start to attack it. Yeah, would the same conversation be happening if we spent $85 million on the library? Probably so.
Leah in Livingston. Hi, Leah. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jason Batto and Stephanie Regal.
Hi. I wanted to agree with the Lafayette caller earlier. I just I graduated maybe 2 years ago, not from LSU, but from a university, and those amenities, such as a gym, really did attract me. I mean,
That's all right. So you came to LSU because of the gym?
Well, not only that, it was the affordability. And I realized that the major that I pursued wasn't necessarily highly rated, but it was affordable.
All right. Well, thank you.
And I didn't use the library at all.
All right. Well, that might not have been such a good thing. But anyway, Claire in Atchafalaya. Claire, you're on with Stephanie and Jason. Hi, Claire.
I'm calling about the library discussion.
Yes.
I moved from Baton Rouge to Lafayette when I got married. And when I lived in Baton Rouge, I had access to the LSU Law Library, the Southern Law Library, the LSU Middleton Library, the Southern Undergrad Library. The libraries in Baton Rouge have great hours, and they're frequently open. At UL, the hours are so minimal that I cannot go before work or after work during the summertime. During the school year, I think it's a little easier, but I have too hard of a time to find parking. Mm-hmm. I think LSU really does have a gym with Middleton Library. I used it a ton when I was a student, and to fuss about it is kind of entertaining to me, just because it really has great hours and really does accommodate the students.
All right. Thank you, Claire. And Stephanie, as we know, the Baton Rouge City Limits has a remarkable library at Goodwood and another one popping up downtown. The Carver Library is quite nice, not far from the new one that's going up downtown. And then we're going to have a new Middleton Library. So do we really need all these libraries?
Well, so, I mean, I'm not armed with the empirical data to be able to answer that question perhaps accurately for you at the moment, but I think it's not fair to compare the Middleton Library to the East Baton Rouge Public Library System, which is wonderful, by the way. And do we have too many of those? Arguably, mm-hmm. I would say yes. You know, but again, I really haven't looked into it enough right now. The library system, the All Library right. Board of Control has data, I think, that would suggest otherwise. But what you're talking about with Middleton is, you know, a serious research library with resources there that you can't get anywhere else. I mean, mm-hmm. I was trying to research just a real estate story a few weeks ago and to try to find archives of old Advocate articles going back to the 1970s. I couldn't get it. And so, I mean, there are things, there's research that Middleton Library has, newspapers that go back to the 1800s. I don't know where else you find that kind of stuff.
All right.
Undergraduate students may not need to go study there or check out a book to do a report like they would have in 1965, but there are other uses for libraries today.
Well, Rick says a great university should have a great library, and that's probably a valid point. And another listener says that LSU should compete for the Trump Presidential Library. Cassandra at LSU. Cassandra, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, I just wanted to comment about the cost. So back to the rec center cost, and I believe with the young man that he was saying earlier, a lot of young people, you know, they are very mature in their decision making and where they choose to go to school. However, when it comes to cost of education, and they've continued to climb in the last few years, even though it's a few hundred dollars a semester, then that continues to add more burden onto the students that never got a chance to vote for those things. And I'm a graduate student, and so when I attended the University of Georgia, we were able to opt out of things that we may not have used, such as the gym, but that doesn't seem to be an option at LSU. And it just seems to kind of get a little more frustrating when you are on a tight budget, when you have these increasing fee bills. And then a second point about the students that attend LSU, a lot of times, where does the money come to pay for school? Is it through loans? Is it through their parents? So even though they all voted, who's paying for that? Is it themselves? Or do they have a second job, which is very difficult, you know, to be a successful student? Those are my only comments.
All right. Most of the LSU student body is, my impression, Jason, on TOPS.
Yes, sir.
Including you, right?
Yes, sir.
And it's a great program. But the money for this, is student fees. It's not included in TOPS. Right. So there's no taxpayer money involved right. here. But if it were not for TOPS, somebody might notice 135 a semester more so than the fact that you basically are getting a free ride because of your achievements and because of this fabulous program. But $135 is a lot, and you got to do it a lot of times to get to $85 million. But now that it's here, I guess the question, if something like this comes up again, maybe there should be more scrutiny about the cost of doing it. And I mentioned earlier, I doubt that the students had any say in who got the construction contract.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I wasn't around in 2010, but I do know that students were on the planning committee and were involved every step of the way.
Okay. Ann on Highland. Hi, Ann. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi. I was calling to second the notion that students that don't use the rec center shouldn't be assessed those fees. If you take one class at LSU, your fees, all the various fees you pay, equal the cost of one class. So the fees are significant. And if you never use the rec center, you know, that's a lot of money to have to pay for the rec center. I also would like to say that the library may not be used by students that have residences on campus, because in between classes, they can go to their room, shut the door, and study in peace. But there are a huge number of commuting students who do not have that ability, and there are very few quiet places to study at LSU other than the library. So even if it's only used for quiet study and not for research, it's essential that it be a good accommodating place.
All right. Jason?
Yes, sir. The library itself, you know, it really is a great place. The new library in the master plan will be much more built around research, much more built around student studying, work group areas. They're also talking about having most of our archives off campus and delivered to students requesting that information. But as far as the UREC itself, it can't be a displaced priority. And I think comparing the library to the UREC is apples to oranges. It's two different pots of money, two different fees and sets of money. And as far as the fees go, the fact that you take one class and your fees equal the cost of the class is outrageous. I agree. But that's not an LSU problem. Once again, that's a state legislature problem. If the university could set its tuition and match most of its other peer institutions, we're much lower. We could possibly build in most of those costs to our tuition and cover them by TOPS. Once again, a legislature problem.
Thank you, Jason Battos. Stephanie, thank you for calling in. I appreciate you contributing to the conversation this morning, and congratulations on the reaction of your column, A Lazy River of Priorities, in the latest Business Report. We'll be back with a report on the Smart Growth Summit right here on Talk Louisiana after this brief pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Sally Baltazar producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. In studio are Rachel DiResto, the Executive Vice President for the Center for Planning Excellence, and John Snow from Emergent Method. They are involved in the Smart Growth Summit. The 2017 summit starts tomorrow, the 12th annual summit. And Rachel, you've been here for every one of them.
Yes, I have.
What can we anticipate over the next few days?
Well, as I say every year, this is our best year yet, because we have a lineup of some fantastic speakers. And I'll tell you first that if you still want to register, just come to the door tomorrow. It opens tomorrow.
And which door?
Oh, that's at the Shaw Center for the Arts.
Where you've been?
Where we've set up every year. And then you can go to summit.cpex.org for information on the agenda. But I'll highlight that this year we decided to partner with John Snow, particularly because he's chair of the Smart City Committee for East Baton Rouge Parish, because we wanted a theme, the Smart City theme. So on the second day, we have a track that features some of the types of technology vendors that are working in cities across the U.S. And so that's going to be a great day. But then also on the first day, we have our keynote, Carol Coletta, and she is senior fellow with the Kresge Foundation's American Cities Practice. And then on the second day, our keynote at lunch is Mayor Andy Burke from Chattanooga.
Yeah, he'll be the keynoter on Wednesday, right?
On Wednesday.
The next generation of smart cities. Now, This is what you do for a living, John. What makes a city a smart city?
That's a great question, Jim. I think that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I would challenge anyone listening to go onto Google and search for smart city, and the breadth of what you would get back would be too extensive to try and even tackle. But at its core, I think being a smarter city comes down to realizing how you can leverage technology and innovation to provide more effective and efficient services to residents, and really invest in your community in a more progressive and intentional way. We've seen a lot of progress here in Baton Rouge over the last several years under Mayor Holden, now under Mayor Broom, when it comes to building a smarter city. And I think Baton Rouge is a really good example of what a smaller to mid-sized city community can do when it really adopts this idea of how can we deliver services and do work with impact by leveraging the capabilities that technology offers. And so this Smart Cities track is really going to be designed to bring in people, thought leaders from around the country who are doing some really amazing things, companies that are innovating to provide provide services and really improve how local governments connect with their residents in a more intentional way, including some speakers here in our own backyard who are doing some pretty exciting things as well with respect to smart city planning.
Well, we hear a lot about transportation issues in Baton Rouge. In order for a city to do well, do those have to be addressed?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so we're going to hear from someone who I call kind of a rock star in the transportation world right now, Salita Reynolds. She's the general manager of the Los Angeles Department. And part of what she's been doing is putting together a technology strategy for the entire city, and that is looking at the next, you know, planning for autonomous vehicles, the kind of shared ride services, shared mobility services that are coming that have to be integrated with transit. And then really her charge is to get more people out walking and biking and to make safe roadways to do so in Los Angeles. So she's going to talk about some of these future trends that are already being applied there in that city. Mm-hmm. And then we also have a specialist from HNTB who's very well known for ITS strategies. And that's your intelligent transportation system strategies. And then we have someone who's really a specialist on autonomous vehicles, Jeff Souser from Stantec.
Well, we've been talking about some of these issues now for a long time. Are we making progress?
I think these are the types of venues where people are coming together to discuss what progress has been made. I think we're definitely seeing some great new use of the open data platform that the city has put in place. And I know John's committee is kind of leading the charge around that.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen here locally in Baton Rouge the impact that more effective data sharing can have on service delivery with the open data platform that we have here. But also when you look at other municipalities around the country, those that are putting themselves on the map are ones that have fully understood and are fully bought into this idea of using data to make better decisions. And a lot of that is driven by this concept of open data and releasing data out into the community so that both internally your agencies can use it in a non-siloed manner to work across agencies and deliver better services, but also residents and app developers and community organizations can see what government is doing, what data is emanating from City Hall, and use those to improve their own neighborhoods and communities.
We're visiting with Rachel DiResto, the Executive Vice President for the Center for Planning Excellence. She's been involved in all 12 of the Smart Growth Summits, and the 12th annual one starts tomorrow at the Shaw Center downtown Baton Rouge. You can register at the door. And John Snow is also with us, involved with Emergent Method, and he makes a living looking at how cities are developing their smart cities concept. What are some cities that we can learn some lessons from in Baton Rouge?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've got a great pioneer with respect to building a smarter city that's coming to us for the Smart Growth Summit, Mayor Andy Burke in the city of Chattanooga. Mayor Burke has been instrumental in identifying ways to leverage investments in things like high-speed broadband, which they have across the entire city of Chattanooga. He's taken steps to form concepts like an innovation district, invest in workforce development opportunities, and really leverage the infrastructure that they have in place there to build a more robust economy. In Chattanooga, when you consider a city the size of Chattanooga, what they've been able to do to position themselves in a pretty crowded marketplace, and they haven't let their population size deter them from being really a pioneer when it comes to being a smarter city. I think on a larger scale, when you look at a city like Pittsburgh, it's a great example of how a city has been able to leverage institutional assets in universities like they have with Carnegie Mellon. I think in similar ways, we can take a lesson learned from Pittsburgh and apply it here with how we leverage our own higher education institutions like LSU. And we've started to do that. You probably saw recently there was a grant announced through the National Science Foundation that the City Parish and LSU were very collaborative in going after, that LSU researchers are going to spend the next 12 months looking at ways to utilize data and applied research capabilities to solve problems here in the greater Baton Rouge area. And those kinds of partnerships are what really progressive and quote-unquote smarter cities are doing to improve their areas.
Mm-hmm. Rachel, what do you see as our biggest challenge in this city?
Well, I think we have in place now a new leader, Mayor Sharon Weston Broom, who's very interested in this, along with some key capable staff in the department and, of course, a new CAO. And I think it's a matter of kind of activating some of the recommendations that are coming out of the Smart City Committee, but also I think building and leveraging on the partnership with LSU and really setting a focus around solving mm-hmm. some kind of problem, whether it's a transportation problem, whether it's a blight problem. Interestingly, we're having a couple of speakers who are coming to talk about technology that's been used post-disaster to really catalog and inventory the condition of blight and the condition mm-hmm. of abandonment of property. And that's key for recovery. And we're seeing that as a result of the Bloomberg class that Mayor Broom has been a part of, the department at the city who is in charge of looking at blight will apply some of that technology to our condition here, which I think is going to make us more resilient in the future.
All right. Brittany asks about plans to make Government Street like Magazine Street. How's that going?
Well, as we understand it, DOTD has announced that project is going under construction by the end of the year. So I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of people who are watching that project closely, a lot of support by the neighborhoods around it who want to be able to walk to some of the new restaurants and destinations that are opening there. You've seen a number of properties changing hands, a lot of investment happening along that corridor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, you know, in the transportation world, a small amount of that public investment really does catalyze a private sector reaction. And so we're seeing a lot of properties being improved, and I think that's going to be what gives Government Street a new character with this new roadway design.
All right, and you've got some headliners in addition to the mayor of Chattanooga. You mentioned Salita Reynolds from the Los Angeles Department of Transportation. Now, how in the world can we compare our traffic situation to Los Angeles?
You know, I think that's an excellent question, and I think what we wanted to do by inviting Salita is really jump ahead, really look long-term, because they are ahead of us in thinking about this applied technology. But in terms of what Salita also brings, she is a president of the NACTO board, and that is a board that looks at our street designs mm-hmm. and how we need to be tweaking them on a constant basis. These are the rules that engineers follow as they are redesigning or designing roadways. And so some of that practical wisdom from her experience in working through some of the issues I think are applicable anywhere, because most of the people who are planning transportation and roadways in cities are looking at those types of guidelines.
Well, thank you, Rachel DiResto, and thank you, John Snow, and good luck with the 12th Annual Smart Growth Summit starting tomorrow at the Shaw Center, downtown Baton Rouge. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.